when I started to write what I really read in the Hebrew Bible, I was fired in 1 minute. Let us make man in our image. Man has become like one of us. Let us go down. Multiple divine figures in the Bible. Different name of gods in the Bible. If Elohim are not God, the Bible is entirely another book. So the Elohim were individuals in flesh and blood with a life longer, much longer than the life of humankind, but they were mortal. And the Elohim group of individuals, an higher civilization with higher knowledges and higher technology, higher powers, those are all flying objects that are clearly and precisely described technologically in the Bible. The system controlling the world is the system clearly described in the Bible. There are a sort of preparation.
If it was disclosed that the Bible translation is not correct and there are many beings and this is more of a historical book, and you know, there these interpretations of God may actually be other beings from other worlds, do you think that that would destroy these religions, or do you think they would adapt?
I think
I would like to start, if you could explain how your years translating ancient Hebrew for official religious publishing changed the way that you viewed the biblical texts.
Oh, yes. The way I translated for this publishing house, Catholic publishing house, which is the most important in Italy, of course, and that translates under the umbrella of the Vatican. I translated for many years, and they published 17 books under my name. And after, when I became public, and when I started to write what I really read in the Hebrew Bible, I was fired in 1 minute. The literal translation is very useful in order to understand this book. It's fundamental, the literal translation, because our religion is a mixture, a union between Greek philosophy and Semitic thought. Without Greek philosophy, our religion cannot exist.
In Gods of the Bible, you emphasize that the Elohim is grammatically plural in many foundational passages. This is one of those moments of literal translation where you're finding a problem, something that hasn't been seen before. And so in your view, what are the implications of something like this, the plural of the Elohim, for example?
Oh, yes. First of all, I want to apologize for my English, which is very basic.
No, your English is fantastic.
No, it's very basic. So I try to make me understood by your audience.
I've had a couple of Italians on now. My audience is beginning to get used to the Italian accent.
Okay.
So please relax, and take your time.
Well, in order to the problem of singular and plural Elohim, I would say that the plural form Elohim is not my interpretation. It's simply Hebrew grammar. The word itself is plural, and in many passages the verbs, pronouns, adjectives connected to it, of course, are plural as well. So the real question is not whether the Bible contains plural traces, because it clearly contains, but rather why later theology insisted on reading everything as singular. This is the real problem. In my opinion, of course, in my opinion, what we are looking at is both a historical evolution and also a deliberate editorial process. The two things are connected. If we look at the oldest biblical traditions, the oldest tradition, especially in passages like Genesis 1:26, let us make man in our image, or Genesis 3:22, man has become like one of us and are the Elohim who were speaking. Or Genesis 11:7, let us go down. We are not reading a strict monotheism in the later theological sense. We are reading the memory of a plurality undeniable of Elohim, each with functions, territories, hierarchies, and relationships. And this is, in effect, the real problem of the Bible, because if Elohim are God, the Bible is a religious book. If Elohim are not God, the Bible is entirely another book, of course. And this question and this Elohim is not unique for Israel. I would say that the entire Near Eastern world functioned that way. The Mesopotamians, the Canaanites, the Egyptians, they all had divine councils, assemblies of gods, for example, just like in the Bible, hierarchies of powerful beings. Israel originally emerged inside that cultural environment and started immediately with concrete polytheism. So in origin, the people of Israel was polytheistic. What happened later, especially during and after the Babylonian exile, is that the priestly class had a major theological and political problem. They needed to preserve a national identity after the catastrophe, of course, of the Babylonian exile. The temple had been destroyed, the monarchy had collapsed, the people were dispersed. In that situation, in my view, of course, consolidating religious tradition became essential for them. So the priestly editors inherited older texts that contained multiple traditions, multiple divine figures in the Bible, different names of gods in the Bible, and sometimes even competing narratives. Instead of eliminating all these materials completely, they harmonized and reinterpreted them through a Yahwistic lens. So the older plurality was not erased entirely, because traces remain clearly everywhere in the Bible, but it was reframed. Elohim gradually became understood as a singular supreme God, even though the grammar often continued to preserve older layers beneath the surface. This is important to know for the believers, for example. In some passages, Elohim governs singular verbs, while in others, plural structures appear. This inconsistency is very interesting, because it suggests a sort of stratification inside the text itself. I often say that the Bible is not a book that descended from heaven complete and coherent. It is a library, a collection of texts written, edited, rewritten across centuries by different groups with different agendas, different political needs, and different theological visions. So is a collection, and I think the priestly redactors were not trying to deceive people in the modern sense of the term, but they were constructing a national theology. They were organizing traditions into a unified framework centered on Yahweh. But during that process, they could not completely eliminate the older memories contained in the text. That is why even today, if we read Hebrew carefully, without theological filters, we continue to encounter plural expressions, divine councils, subordinate Elohim, territorial divisions among gods, so-called gods, and passages that make much more sense in a polytheistic or henotheistic context than in later philosophical monotheism. So, in order to answer your question, so yes, I would say the post-exilic period was decisive. But I also think there was a conscious editorial harmonization carried out by priestly schools, attempting to unify older competing traditions into a centralized Yahwistic system. And this project started officially with the king Josiah, king of Judah. We are in the 7th century before Christ, who wanted to transform Yahweh first in the most important of the Elohim, and after in the unique God. And in many ways, the fascinating thing is that the text still preserves the evidence of that transformation. That is clear.
So the monotheistic interpretation of a singular God, this is a way that the priestly class of these historical times were trying to make something very complicated more streamlined, less complex. But through that, that's a very big error to have, the singular of Elohim, if it's actually describing multiple people or beings or entities. That's a very large kind of difference between the two theologies, correct? So what do you believe the Elohim really means?
The term Elohim, really means the term Elohim, is this the question?
What they represent, if not a singular God of divine power from a place beyond our reality, if that is not what Elohim truly means, then in your opinion, what is Elohim? Are they alien beings? Are they something else? What is it for you?
Well, I think this is one of the biggest obstacles that modern readers face when approaching the Hebrew Bible. Most people believe they are reading the text directly, but in reality they are reading centuries of theological interpretation finalized to unify all the religion in a unique God. When we open the Bible today, especially in the West of the world, of course, we unconsciously bring with us Greek philosophy, Christian theology, ideas of omnipresence, immateriality, transcendence, infinity, all concepts that belong to Greek thought, not to Semitic thought. This concept, much more to Plato, for example, because derived from Plato and from Neoplatonism, and later church theology took these ideas and put them into this theological elaboration, and this elaboration doesn't match with Hebrew thought, with Semitic thought. And the Elohim, in my opinion, were a group of individuals. I don't know where they came from, because the Bible doesn't speak about this topic, but they were an higher civilization with higher knowledges, and higher technology, higher powers, that at a certain point subdivided the land in many territories, and the chief of the Elohim, named Elion, who means who stay above, They subdivided the land in many territories, and Elion assigned each territory to each Elion, to each Elohim, sorry. And this is clearly written in Dead Sea Scrolls. And so the Elohim were a sort of colonizers, a sort of governors. And Yahweh had in legacy the people of Jacob. It is important to know that because people think that Yahweh ruled all over the Hebrew. It's not real. Yahweh ruled only over the family of Jacob and his sons. So the Hebrew who don't belong to the family of Jacob are out of the governor Yahweh. And this is important because it's necessary to divide Hebrew from Israeli people, because Jacob took the name Israel, and so the Israeli people is only the offspring of Jacob. In effect, when we read the oldest layers of the text carefully, Yahweh appears as a very concrete being, because the Elohim were beings in flesh and blood. They were humankind-like, because they walk, they eat, they drink, they were often drunk, they ruled with an iron fist over their people, the people assigned to each of these Elohims. And so we have in the Bible an history totally different from that narrated by the theologians, of course.
Now, you say that the original priestly translations, these simplifications of the theology, were done not to deceive, not as a way to deceive people and to trick people, but a way of simplifying and helping people understand a cultural model, like you said, a cultural theology. But in the modern theology, in the modern power of the Vatican and Christian religion, would you say that there are people who do have this knowledge, that do believe the same as you, that the Elohim represented a powerful civilization, that they came to this planet, this type of very controversial idea that actually got you removed from being able to provide these translations in the future? They fired you. So would you say that there are people within the modern structure of religious power that believe what you believe?
Oh, yes. There are many religious that think like me. There are also many rabbi that think like me. But the problem, the real problem, is that theologians, monotheistic theologians, progressively in the time, allegorized and spiritualized the text. And this is the problem, because the people are used to read the text with the length of the theologians. Instead, this is the word of God. We need to read the Bible. Also, the Bible, the normal Bible we have at home, so the Bible translated in every language in the world, we can understand that the Bible speaks about a multiplicity of beings ruling over various nations. And there are many belonging to the higher hierarchy in the church that know very well this fact, but all the religion is founded on the idea of the monotheistic idea.
Monotheistic, sorry. Yes. So they have dug themselves into a hole. You can't say different anymore, because your entire model has been built on this. So how could you then turn around and say, actually, no, it's not this. You cannot do it after all of this time.
Oh, yes. And it is difficult to make the people understand that the Bible is not what is narrated by theological religion, but is a sort of summary of a larger, of a wider amount of histories present all around the world. In this case, we talk about the laws, the myths narrated in the Middle East, of course, because the Bible depends from these laws. And what is curious is that hierarchies tell that the stories of the Sumerians are myths, and the Bible is the truth revealed by God. But the first part of the Bible is a copy of the Sumerian narratives. So we have this weird situation. The original is a myth. The copy is a real truth. It's incredible.
Yes, this is a problem.
It's ridiculous.
This is a problem.
It's ridiculous.
Yes, because you're referring, because in Sumerian mythology you have Oannes, which is Noah, the same archetype. These things share a correlation so strongly.
Oh, yes. But the Bible, likely for us, is more concrete than the theologians say. It's enough to read it take the Bible at the face value. Likely the contract I had with the Catholic publishing house tasked me to literally translate the Bible. So I, at the time, had the need to seek the rises of a single term And the rise of single term is clear and tell us what the single term says. But what is also important, most important, is to read above all some keywords like Elohim, Elion, Bara, Olam. I can after explain what they mean. Read these keywords into the context in which they are used. For example, the term kavod or the term ruach. If we read in the context, we understand the real meaning of these terms. And the real meaning of these terms is a concrete meaning, absolutely concrete. Doesn't need interpretation. It's enough to read literally what is written down.
In your opinion, how important are the Dead Sea Scroll materials for understanding the larger historical model?
For raw material, what do you mean?
The Dead Sea Scrolls and similar Semitic literature, do you consider these materials to be important for reanalyzing, reinterpreting the theological models?
Oh, yes, it's most important because the Dead Sea Scrolls reveals some truths that in the Bible are modified. So, for example, we read that Abraham, when was called out of his territory, the land of Ur, the land of Sumerian, he present himself to Melchizedek, who was one of the Elohim who worked for the chief of the Elohim, Elion. And this is written down in the Dead Sea Scrolls, and Abraham swore to Elion his fidelity and not to Yahweh. This is important to know because Elion, El, Yahweh, Eloah refers to a different individuals. And this is written also by one of the main exegetes, Hebrew exegetes, Professor Emmanuel Tov, who writes clearly that these terms refer to a different individuals. So there is no doubt. The Elohims were many. The Bible speaks about an assembly of Elohim in the Psalm 82. And in this psalm, the director of the assembly says also, referring to Elohim, remind, you are Elohim, but you are mortal just like all other human. So the Elohim were individuals in flesh and blood with a life longer, much longer than the life of humankind, but they were mortal. And this is clear also, for example, in the first commandment, the first of the ten, you don't worship other gods. This verse means that there are other Elohim, and means that Israeli people of Israel had to worship Yahweh until he would be present, because he goes away, or because he died, I don't know. But is clear that Yahweh can be present or not be present. And it's difficult to think that omnipotent, omnipresent God could be and not be.
It's a contradiction.
Yes, contradiction, clear contradiction. But if you read literally the Bible, there are no contradictions. All becomes logical. All becomes understandable. Without interpretation, without need to introduce various categories, just allegories, metaphors, mysteries of faith, and so on. If you read literally, the entire history becomes logical and comprehensible, understandable.
Are you familiar with the term cargo cult?
Oh yes, I know very well. I wrote about that in Skies of Fire.
Would you say that humanity is in essence a cargo cult to these other beings, misinterpreted as gods?
Yes, I think the origin is the same. Likely, in this case, the scientists had the opportunity to study this kind of religion when it was growing. In the case of the Bible, is clearly written, but but it's fundamental to read literally the Bible. And this becomes clear, absolutely clear.
So we're in a very interesting time discussing in the modern context things that would be in historical context be seen as mystical, spiritual. So I'm speaking now about the UFO subject. The US government, the American government has been opening up to some degree, opening up a little bit about the UFO subject. Do you think that there are correlations to what is happening in the modern time and what is being described in these ancient texts? And are we actually seeing potentially the continuation of this presence, but we're seeing it through the modern lens of, UFOs and aliens?
I think today we are still living under the umbrella of the Bible. The system controlling the world is the system clearly described in the Bible, the system that now controls over the world. There are organizations, of course, that lend money, and they are rulers. And there are other nations who take this money, and they become immediately slaves. So the financial system, who rules over all over the world, is clearly described in the book of the Proverbs in the Bible. And it is applied perfectly, perfectly, without variation. So we live under the Bible. And this is why I, in the books, but you know, the books, all, of course, are translated by a native speaker, professor at the Columbia University, not by me, of course, for clearly. And in this book, I describe this fact, and is important to know that the Bible is fundamental not only for the religion, but for all the society, for all organization of the society, because we are under the Bible. And so is important, so would be important that people know. But it's difficult to share this this concept, because the people prefer to believe in a spiritual God. Of course, I don't say that God doesn't exist. About God, I don't know anything. I don't speak about God. God is belongs to the faith, and I don't want discussing the faith. I only want to say that the Bible doesn't speak about God. But this doesn't mean that God doesn't exist. I don't know.
Right. Yes.
I want to be clear about this topic. Absolutely clear. Because I don't have the truth. Absolutely. I think if one read the Bible in this way, the Bible becomes fascinating also for other people, because it's fascinating and is important in order to understand also what it's happening today.
There have been statements over time, especially over the last few years, from the Vatican, even from the Pope, about the implications of other intelligences from other worlds and how would this impact the religion. I remember the previous Pope saying that, you know, if there are aliens, then they are brothers and sisters in God as well. So preparing people in a way, like, it seems like there is a level of preparation. And then you have the United States government, of course, talking about UFOs in an official capacity. Do you think there is some form of preparation for humanity occurring right now? Or do you think that this is coincidental?
No, I think there are a sort of preparation of the humanity to the revelation, to the disclosure, and I think they are the governors, of course, are using different methods. For example, talking about UFOs or UAP in at the Congress, but also with the film, the movies, because with the movies you can transfer what the people think to be sci-fi, but in reality is science. This science enter in the brain of the people,
subconsciously,
subconscious of the people, and the people becomes ready to to have a disclosure.
Do you think that a disclosure of, for example, if it was disclosed that the Bible translation is not correct and there are many beings and this is more of a historical book and, you know, there these interpretations of God may actually be other beings from other worlds, do you think that that would destroy these religions, or do you think they would adapt?
I think they would adapt. Because the church lives since 2,000 years, so the church is very able to adapt themselves to all situations. It's not problems. The Jesuits already said that the church is ready to receive these brothers from the sky and to give them the baptism if they would, of course. So the church will survive to the to the disclosure, absolutely.
Well, it's one of the things that's usually said, isn't it? That we can't handle the truth, that things would collapse, that everything would collapse. And I don't believe that. I think humans are resilient. And even if you have a particular set of beliefs, most of the time we are resilient and we can change our opinion. But of course, these are very integrated belief systems. It's extremely difficult to try and change these types of belief systems. But the discussions happening now, the UFO discussion, all of these various conversations are very controversial, suddenly becoming public, becoming more open. I think people are more ready, more understanding. And I would also say that people have experienced so much, COVID, the wars, the Israel, so much has happened. I think that we are a bit desensitized. I think that most people maybe wouldn't even believe the government if the government said, oh, by the way, the aliens are real. We'd be like, oh, I don't believe you. You're just making this up for another agenda. This is propaganda. So we're in a time where it's very difficult to even trust a disclosure,
yes.
You know?
And I believe, actually, that most people hope to have a disclosure.
Mm.
Hope to have a disclosure in order to hope to have someone who give order to the world.
Exactly.
Because this world now is chaotic, is under the violence, is under the finance. Mm. Is under control of the so-called cult, la casta, elites.
Yes.
And so I think that most people not only is prepared, but is hoping, is opens, is hoping to see these beings coming from the sky to put order on the earth.
Give me the answers. Tell me what to do.
Okay, of course.
Well, so Sky's a brilliant book, fantastic book. Very much enjoyed reading it.
Thank you.
Do you think that there was a different level of consciousness, a different level of perception in ancient humanity that allowed them to see more of these things, more of these phenomena?
I think that ancient humanity had less philosophical way to see and to understand various strange weird phenomena. So when, for example, I remain, of course, into the Bible, Ezekiel, Elijah, the prophet Zechariah, the same Moses, didn't have a problem to accept the reality of the Kavod, of the Elohim, of Yahweh, the Ruach of the Elohim, the Megillah of the Elohim, the Epha of the Elohim. Those are all flying objects that are clearly and precisely described technologically in the Bible. Without doubt, we have to invent every sort of explication to say that this term, these tools, are metaphors, are object of visions, are object of dreams. No, absolutely no. For example, the prophet Zechariah wrote, "I was sleeping when I saw a flying Megillah." Megillah means a cylinder. And he gives also the measure of the cylinder. 20 meter for 10 meter. And for them, this manifestation of the Elohim were, of course, extraordinary, but real, absolutely real. Ezekiel narrates when he get up one of these flying objects, and Ezekiel describes, for example, the direction from where these flying objects are arriving. And Ezekiel describes clearly some various mechanic parts of these tools. Not for the ancient authors, for the ancient people, these tools were absolutely real. The problem was, they didn't have the vocabulary to describe these tools, and so they had to use the word available at their time. But when we read what is written, we understand what they are talking about.
Do you think that the apocryphal texts like the Book of Enoch are important in understanding this as well?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think the Book of Enoch is very, very important. And yeah. because is more clear than the Bible, and speaks about these travels of Enoch in the space. And what is curious is that in the Bible, when the text speaks about Enoch, uses a verb who means to go and forth, to go on and
back and forth. Back and forth, yeah.
Back and forth. Thank you.
Prego.
I didn't <It's okay>. remember. Back and forth. And this verb is clear. After that, Elohim took Enoch and bring him in their realm, we can say. But the Bible, in the Psalm 24, talks about we can call stargates clearly. In the Psalm 24, Monsignor Corrado Balducci, which was an eminence of the Vatican, told that the Psalm 24 affirm that in the universe there are other beings. But not only. At the end of this psalm is written that there are two sort of doors. First, called Sherim, the second called Petachim. These doors open themselves after a vocal order, and through these doors, tells Psalm 24, and I invite to read it, it's brief, through these doors passed Yahweh with his kavod. And not only, but the second kind of doors is called Petache Olam. That means doors which open themselves on the unknown location.
I'm just bringing up Psalm 25. This is the correct passage.
So, oh, yes, I see. And Olam is one of the key terms which is always mistranslated. Also, if in some vocabulary is written that Olam doesn't mean eternity, but means unknown, an unknown amount of time or an unknown location. And in Psalm 24 is written that the second kind of doors are petachim, which open themselves on an unknown location, unknown for human, of course, not for Yahweh. And this verse reminds me the travels of the god of the Egyptian god Ra, who traveled into a sort of tunnel to go to another world. And in the Bible, these verses are always interpreted as doors open on the eternity. But is absolutely wrong. Absolutely. Olam doesn't mean eternity. Ever.
So it seems like if, you know, this is the correct way to view it, and my own research beyond listening to your fantastic research into the Bible, my own research into ancient history and phenomenology and the modern world of disclosure and classified UFOs, it feels to me that there is an extremely strong connection here to be drawn. And I'm very interested in getting your opinion on, for example, the watchers in the Book of Enoch descending down. This is very much the same as the Elohim laying with the women of men, right? Producing with the women of men. Do you think that we are engineered as a species in our evolution? There is these huge gaps. Suddenly we just grow our brains fundamentally. We accelerate faster than any other creature on this planet. Nothing is even close to doing what we do and being what we are. So do you believe that we at some point in history were engineered, genetically manipulated?
Yes, absolutely. I think that humankind was engineered many times in order to improve every time our brain capacity, because the Elohim needed to have slaves to use for their needs, their necessity. So we are sons of the stars, because Elohim intervened on a pre-existing beings on the earth, Homo erectus or Homo habilis, intervened genetically and intervened many times, producing a too rapid evolution of our brain. Too rapid for the nature. We had our brain in the moment in which it is unuseful, and the nature doesn't make this mistake. But Elohim prepared this new race, humankind, for the future, to rule over a species of intelligent animal, an animal able to understand and execute orders. And after many, many times, the Elohim passed the rule, the kingdom, from their sons to the human, when they thought the human were prepared to do so. So we are effectively genetically modified, and after that there are those 200 angels you speak before about, 200 angels who descended on the earth and made what was forbidden, the interbreeding between the two races. And from this interbreeding were born the so-called giants, the Nephilim, okay? And the book of Enoch narrates this event more clearly than the Bible. Because, for example, the Bible doesn't speak that Nephilim were sons of this of that interbreeding, but simply says that at the time of that interbreeding, on the earth there were Nephilim. But if it's possible, I want to say you a curiosity. Nephilim is a plural term. The singular is Nephila. Nephila in Aramaic has a unique meaning. Orion constellation.
It means the Orion constellation.
Nephila means only Orion constellation.
God, wow, okay. Didn't know that.
So,
didn't know that.
If Nephilim is the plural of Nephila, we are at least allowed to suggest, to make an hypothesis that Nephilim could mean those who came from
Orion. Yeah. Wow.
It's very curious.
Very curious. It's very curious because Orion comes up in the UFO subject many times.
In all continents of the Earth, Orion
is
present.
Yes, Orion is the big one. So that's very, very interesting. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but if there's anything else that you feel is important to impress upon my audience, then please, by all means.
I want to explain some few keywords. The term Yahweh is a term that was pronounced for the first time when the Hebrew language didn't exist yet. So we don't know how is the meaning and the real pronouns of this term. The Hebrew is written only with consonants. So we can suggest that in origin Yahweh could be pronounced Yahweh, but without meaning. Second, Elohim is a term that whose meaning is unknown all over the world. There are many translations, but are all translations that use fantasy. And so I suggest in the Bible to let Elohim without translated. Third, the term Olam I speak about before. Olam doesn't mean eternity, and the concept of eternity is not present in the Bible, is not present in the Semitic culture. A noun indicates only an amount of time unknown or an unknown location. The verb bara, the first verb of the Bible, Bereshit bara Elohim, Hashamayim v'haaretz, and so on, Bara is always translated as to create. Bara doesn't mean create. Bara means intervene in a pre-existent situation in order to modify it. The concept of creation ex nihilo doesn't exist in the Bible. Doesn't exist. The concept of omnipotence doesn't exist in the Bible. In the book of Genesis, God, the so-called God, introduced himself to Abraham, saying, I am El, the Almighty. And Almighty is always translated as omnipotent. But also in the some notes of, for example, the Bible of Jerusalem, is clearly written that Almighty doesn't mean omnipotent, but means God of the desert or God of the mountain. But theologians can't accept this translation, and so introduced the concept of omnipotence. But this concept is not present in the Bible, ever. Omniscience is not present in the Bible, ever. Immortality is not present. I said before that also Elohim are mortal. You can read this clearly written at the end of the Psalm 82. So I suggest to read the Bible putting this term apart without a translation. When we find eternity, we put apart eternity and introduce Olam. Let him for what it is. Let Almighty for what it is. El Shaddai. And if we read carefully the Bible, we find also the name of other Elohim clearly described as rulers of other peoples. And those other peoples were parents of Israel, and Yahweh often give the order to exterminate these peoples in order to take their territories. So it's necessary to read very carefully the Bible, pay attention to each term, and pay attention to each term into its context, because the context helps us to understand the real meaning of this term.
I'd be interested to know what your opinion is on demons and the devil and this original description. Are we talking about bad aliens, to be blunt?
Yes.
Yes.
When the theologians transformed Yahweh in a spiritual god, transformed the angels and the Elohim, enemies of Yahweh, in devils, in evils. So, for example, there in the Bible, there is one Elohim named Baal Zavuv. This term is a proper name of that Elohim and was transformed in the evil Belzebub. There is another Elohim, enemy of Yahweh, named Baal Zaphon. That means Lord of the North. And Baal Zaphon, through the Greek language, was transformed in Belphegor. So the bad angels became the devils, but were Elohim themselves.
And it's just a different interpretation from demons and angels and demons. It could very well just be extraterrestrials.
Oh, yes, I it
Yes.
could. I think that the angels were the minor range of the military hierarchy of the Elohim,
Hierarchy. Yeah.
which had Elion as a chief. There were Elohim. Under the Elohim, there were Malachim, so the angels, the messengers, and
Right.
the enemies of Yahweh, for the theologians, became demons.
Right.
But it absolutely logical if you read the Bible in this way. It's logical and clear, and doesn't need other explications or interpretations. It's all written.
Well, thank you so much. And Mauro was kind enough to send me copies of Gods of the Bible and Skies Afire, two fantastic books. I really congratulate you on your thorough research. You have done an amazing job. I really thoroughly enjoyed reading them. And I would suggest to my audience, please do read them yourselves. They will be in the description box below. If you want to click on a link, you can find all of Mauro's work. But Mauro, grazie mille. I really appreciate you coming and
Thank
spending
you
time
to
with me.
you. Thank you to you. It has been a very pleasure
Good,
for
good, good.
me to talk with you. I apologize for my English. I hope I hope your listeners understood what
I promise. If your English is far better than my Italiano, so I wouldn't worry too much. No, my audience will understand you. Don't worry. You are very clear. You are very clear. So please don't worry about that.
And so, thank you for having me in your podcast. Thank you for this very enjoyable conversation.
Grazie, grazie.
Well, I hope we'll have the chance to speak together again another
Absolutely.
time in the future when you want. I am publishing other two books in the next month, And I thanked, of course, as well to all the friends who listened to me, listened to us today. All the best to you and to your audience. Ciao.